Join me and follow the podcast Conspiracy Theories, where we explore what's really going on behind the official narrative. Like, what if the Loch Ness Monster isn't a monster at all, but an elephant? What do the richest 1% know that we don't? And why are they building all those bunkers? And really, what the heck is going on with the Denver airport? Join me every week to see just how high up this goes on the Spotify podcast, Conspiracy Theories. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another thrilling installment. I have a good one slated for this evening. Ghosts, creatures, aliens. So make yourselves comfortable as I push play on tonight's very first entry. A chiller out of the Hawkeye State. Please welcome Van back to the program.
Hey there, Derek. My name is Van. I have called in a couple times before, but I am currently listening to season 17, episode 17, in which you shared a couple calls about Big Feet that were seen in and around Corn. Now, I also grew up around Corn, like you mentioned you did. I grew up in Iowa, which is, you know, the corn capital of the world. So there's corn everywhere you see. And I only ever had one creepy experience with it, but it was enough to, well, let's just say it happened like 8 years ago, and I still remember it vividly. Now, this didn't actually happen in Iowa. This happened in Illinois. I was going to school at a small university about half an hour west of Springfield, Illinois. Now, this university, it was Lincoln Christian University. It was quite literally in the middle of the cornfield. We were surrounded by corn on three sides for miles and miles. And I like to take walks pretty late at night around campus, like 2 a.m. kind of late. So I was walking around campus, and the road that ran up to campus ran parallel with the cornfield. It was just like a country road that is stereotypically Midwestern. Rock road that you can think of. But I was walking along this road late at night when I started hearing carnival music playing off in the distance in the corn. I mean, like, I distinctly heard it loud and clear coming from probably only a couple hundred feet into the corn. There weren't any other accompanying sounds. There weren't any lights, like lanterns or anything, no other voices. I didn't see anything. All I heard was this creepy, like, slow, wind-up carnival music. You know, like in the movies when the merry-go-round inevitably starts up by itself and it starts really slow and starts picking up speed? That's what I heard coming from the middle of a cornfield at 2 a.m. in Illinois. I definitely didn't stick around to see what it was. I'm not saying that I think that there is a creepy clown wandering the cornfields of Illinois. All that I know is that even if it was just someone in the field at 2 a.m. playing a recording of creepy clown music, that in and of itself is freaky. Not even to mention what else it could have been. But yeah, that was about it. I turned tail and ran back to my dorm, and that was my last 2 a.m. walk that I took around campus for the remainder of the time there until I graduated. But I love the podcast. Keep doing what you're doing, and I hope you have a good day. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you, Van. What in the killer clowns from outer space was that? Creepy carnival music emanating from a cornfield. Well, if that doesn't creep you out, then you've likely never found yourself in a cornfield after dark. Now, we are in pursuit of the truth here at MAU, even if that means debunking a good story. Not to say that I can debunk this one, but we might have come up with a logical explanation that doesn't involve the supernatural or the paranormal. It's not often discussed for whatever reason, but some farmers use music to help stimulate plant growth. And although it sounds crazy, there is some science to back it up. The following clip from Greenhorn Grove perfectly sums up the working hypothesis.
Research from the University of Bristol discovered that birds chirping in the morning actually wakes up plants for the day. The frequency of birdsong stimulates the plant's photoreceptors, which triggers the start of photosynthesis even before direct sunlight hits them. And it's not just birdsongs. Playing music helps plants grow by stimulating cell activity through sound wave vibrations. Studies show that plants exposed to frequencies between 125 and 250 hertz experience increased photosynthesis and enzyme production. The vibrations enhance nutrient absorption and cell division, leading to healthier, more robust plants. A study in South Korea found that plants exposed to music had 20% more biomass over time, meaning greater leaf size, stronger stems, and faster growth.
And in all of our research, we found that classical music works the best. And if these yield increases are correct, I don't see too many farmers turning up their noses at the practice. A $100 Bluetooth speaker will probably get the job done. So maybe that's what Van heard that night. A farmer trying to squeeze out a few more ears of corn using some calliope music or something. Now, before we move on, Delaney stumbled upon a brief recording of someone over on Reddit that had an awfully similar experience near a cornfield at night. And they managed to record it on video. The following is an amplified version of that clip that we pulled from Reddit user Lugos La Palomino.
Y'all hear this? It's coming from a cornfield.
I'm not gonna lie. It sort of sounds like carnival music to me, but it's really hard to make out. But after hearing that, I really do hope that it was just a savvy farmer and not something sinister hiding between the rows. Because I've walked many a cornfield at night growing up, and if I heard mysterious music coming from the corn, I'd likely die right there on the spot. Fun stuff, Van. For us, at least. We thank you again for getting us started.
Bottom of the fourth, trailing right now 2-1.
Memorial Day is coming up, and Ghost Bed is making it a great time to upgrade with $200 off adjustable base bundles, a mattress, and an adjustable base paired together for the ultimate bedroom upgrade. If upgrading your sleep has been on your to-do list, this is the moment. I've struggled with sleep my whole life, and I'm constantly looking for ways to make my sleep more comfortable. When I came across Ghost Bed not too long ago, the more I looked into them, the more I liked what I found. They're a family-run business with over 20 years in the industry. Their mattresses are handcrafted in the USA and Canada, and they have over 100,000 positive reviews from happy customers. Plus, they have a cool name. There's no big corporate machine here, just a company that's been quietly doing things right for a long time. Every Ghost Bed mattress also comes with cooling built right in, not as some upgrade you have to pay extra for. And if you're not sure which mattress is right for you, head to ghostbed.com/MAU and take their mattress quiz. It walks you through exactly what you need based on how you sleep. Your mattress ships fast and free, and you've got 101 nights to try it out. If it's not the right fit, you get your money back. Plus, code MAU gets you an extra 10% off site-wide when you upgrade your sleep with Ghost Bed, the makers of the coolest beds in the world. That's ghostbed.com/MAU with code MAU for an extra 10% off site wide.
Solano, it's this year. Sinker leads the way at 38%.
Now for a little something ghostly. Please welcome Amber from Parts Unknown.
Hi, Derek. My name is Amber, and this story takes place in Iowa in December of around 2008. My grandmother was diagnosed with lung cancer and was getting treatment, and she was staying at her home in the basement in a hospital bed my mother had brought in. My mother also slept in the basement in case my grandma needed anything during the night, if she was needed help going to the bathroom, all that. Towards the end of her life, she started to decline very rapidly, which landed her into the hospital. After a grand mal seizure, in addition to her lung cancer, we found out she had multiple brain tumors and a brain bleed. To this day, we are still amazed that she did not present any symptoms of a brain tumor beforehand. And I mean, she was getting treatment for cancer, so any of the symptoms she was having, we just attributed to her treatment. So one night while my grandmother was in a coma, my mom and I went home and my uncle stayed with my grandma and I slept on the hospital bed she slept in and my mom slept on her bed on the other side of the room. That night I dreamt that my grandmother was alive and well and happy and she just was glowing and she was walking around and it was a beautiful thing to see. And when I woke up, I had this sense of peace, even though I knew she was dying and she was in a coma. Well, that evening she passed and it was very difficult to see. I'd never seen anyone pass away before or been around that. It was very emotional. But the next day, after some rest, we were getting things in order and my mom and I were talking in the kitchen when I heard a voice calling from the basement. It sounded like my grandmother calling for my mom. I stood stunned in the kitchen. In my head, I was like, I couldn't have heard that. And my mom does not like to talk about anything that's paranormal. My grandmother was Southern. She was from Georgia. And she had the best voice, the best laugh, and I just loved hearing her speak. So for me, hearing her call my mom from the basement, calling my mom's name, there was no denying it for me. I knew it was her. So a few years later, I told my mother what I had heard that day, and what surprised me the most is that she heard it too. And so that just validated the whole experience for me. My mother also had experienced phantom phone calls from my grandmother's old number after she passed, so that was another experience my mother had. Since then, I haven't heard any voices from my grandmother. She seems to be at peace because it was years before she visited me in a dream again. No one else in my family had experienced anything, but I believe my mom and I are sensitive to the paranormal, which is why she experienced what she did, and which is why she doesn't like to go into anything paranormal because it scares her. Thanks for letting me submit this, and I appreciate everything, and I love the show. Take care.
Thank you, Amber. It sure sounds like she was trying to get a message across of some sort. That activity seems awfully persistent for a simple hello and how are you. But maybe that's just my opinion. But I do really like the detail about her distinct voice and how it would have been difficult to mistake the beckoning voice for anyone else. That is a detail you can really hang your hat on. Amazing stuff, Amber. You got me thinking about both of my grandmothers. So thank you again for taking the time to call in. And speaking of calling, if you have a story you would like me to share on the show, just give my hotline a call at 888-608-NIGHT. That's 888-608-NIGHT. Or you can record a voice memo and email it to me at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. Now remember to call from a quiet place. That one is important. One story per call. Only share a story once. Call back if you need more time and true tales only, please. This ain't the place for fiction. Again, that's 888 1-800-608-NIGHT or monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. We have operators standing by. Now, with grandmothers in mind, this next caller shares a name with one of mine. Please welcome Judy, all the way from Texas.
Hi, Derek. My name is Judy. I'm from San Antonio, Texas. I'm calling because of one of the most recent episodes, the stories from prison, where I believe it was the first story of the woman who had been struggling with mental health. She was pregnant, who said, you know, she was going to end her life, and that some woman put her hand over her head and she said that it felt like honey falling all over her, and that it was like the sweetest, most relieving feeling, and that after that her depression was practically gone. So I kind of had like a similar experience. So I grew up very religious. My parents were Catholic, and I guess you could say I was like a cradle Catholic. I got, you know, baptized in my first communion, confirmation. I went to like youth group, and I was very involved. Not really anymore. I've kind of left the church since then. But at some point, it was a really big part of my life. And I remember the very first time I went to a retreat. I think I was like, 14? It was bilingual. And so it was kind of hard to understand just because I know Spanish better now just because of my job. But back then, it was a bit of a struggle. But I did understand it more than I spoke it. And so at the time, you know, I was a teenager. I was angsty. I had suffered like some pretty bad trauma, like as a child, and also like as, you know, just whatever angst and anger and depression and anxiety comes with being a teenager. So I was carrying around a lot of weight, and it was like a very dark time for me. And so I went on this retreat my parents had sent me. It was, I believe, just a day retreat. And so, like I said, there was a bit of a language barrier, so I wasn't really connecting as much as I would have liked to. But there was a part where it was called adoration. For anybody who's not familiar with like Catholicism, that's pretty much just, I guess, where you like sit in the presence of Jesus, like through the Eucharist. There's like a whole chapel dedicated to it. Usually during retreats, it's like you're actively in the presence of it. And sometimes like you have like speakers and whatnot. And I guess there was like a moment where, like I said, language barrier. So I wasn't really all that sure what was going on, but I knew that we were in adoration. And you know how you see it like in the movies where people start kind of like putting their hands up in the air and kind of wailing and, you know, letting the spirit speak through you and whatnot. So it's kind of like that. And it honestly kind of scared me at first because I wasn't used to all that. But I guess in the moment, like, I decided to open myself up and I asked God, hey, like, can you help me? Like, I was in such pain, you know, I had such a heaviness in my heart and I was just crying. I just remember crying and crying and crying. This suffering, the sadness was just a lot. I asked God, you know, please do something about it. Take it away. I don't know. And the craziest thing happened. I, in the middle of that moment, I'm not even joking, I felt like I could feel my heart. Like, literally, I could feel my heart. And I could feel a piece of it, like, chip off. And there was still, like, a piece there. It's so hard to describe. I literally cannot fully explain it without sounding crazy. But yeah, it left me. It like floated away. And the relief that I felt from that was indescribable. It was, I don't know, it was like a piece of that heaviness that was weighing down on me literally physically left my body. And I've never felt that again. It was crazy. You know, I tell this story to people and they're like, how could you experience that and, you know, no longer be a part of your religion or,
even doubt like the existence of God. And I honestly don't know. I have no idea. You know, I have my own qualms and quarrels with Catholicism and with God. And I mean, that was beautiful, you know, and I honor aspects of my previous religion and religious experiences. And, you know, I learned a lot, but that was so profound. Anyways, thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thank you, Judy. You know, the saying goes that God works in mysterious ways. Well, I like to think that the human brain does as well. It still holds many secrets we've yet to unlock. And perhaps some sort of reset, self-induced or otherwise, is part of all that. Because like you, Judy, as a non-religious person, I find it much easier to chalk this up to brain activity than to some deity. But look, whatever it was, it seemed to have worked. And that's really all that matters. A miraculous tale, Judy. We're glad to hear the weight has been lifted. And we thank you again for bringing in.
Think about all the things, Jerry.
Plenty of time down the road to talk about it. Now,
have you ever stopped to wonder just how close you've come to danger without even realizing it? Every single day, we encounter countless people on the street, in the grocery store, at the gym, never truly knowing who they are or what they're capable of. But what if one of those seemingly ordinary people was hiding a dark secret? What if they had done something unthinkable or were planning to? The Minds of Madness is a weekly true crime podcast that dives deep into the criminal psyche, covering the most shocking and disturbing cases you've ever heard from all over the world. We're talking about ordinary people who do the most unthinkable things, like a feral Goldilocks-style intruder who left a disgusting calling card before embarking on a reign of terror that led a nationwide manhunt, or a seductive ex who used voodoo and manipulation to get whatever she wanted. The Minds of Madness examines the psychology of the perpetrators, trying to understand what makes them tick while interviewing experts in forensic psychology and criminology, as well as survivors who fought for justice. So what are you waiting for? The Minds of Madness is available wherever you get your podcast, or visit mindsofmadnesspodcast.com for more information. I also put a link in tonight's show notes.
For life to have, you know, a boogeyman in the name.
I mean, his.
Now, for those of you that suffer from pedophobia, you're not going to like this next one. That's someone with the irrational fear of dolls. Please welcome Mike, also out of the state of Texas.
Hey, Derek. This is Mike. I live in San Antonio, Texas. So at the time I was living with my parents, I got to say I was about 16, 17, so, you know, almost the end of high school. And I lived with my mom, my dad, and my younger sister. My younger sister is about 5 years younger than me, so she was about 11 or so. So one day I'm in my bedroom, and it was middle of the day, bright, sunny, gorgeous day, birds singing. And I wanted to go, I guess, get something from the kitchen, drink of water, let's say. So I would have had to pass both my parents' bedroom, my sister's bedroom, the front door, the living room, in order to get to the kitchen, which was on the other side of the house. So I leave my room, and I walk down the hallway towards my sister's room, which would be to my left. The door was open. Now, I've always had weird feelings when I was headed towards my sister's room, or when I looked in there, and I don't know, just weird, ominous feelings, but, you know, I'm a teenager boy. I just shrugged it off, like, oh, you know, nothing can scare me. So I'm going towards the kitchen, and something just tells me to look in her room. I was home alone at the time, so I didn't hear anything. Nobody was talking to me, but just something's telling me, look in here. So as I'm headed towards the refrigerator, I am looking to my left, which would be looking directly into my sister's room. And she had a bookshelf kind of on the southern wall, which would be be a little bit further to my left. And I look up there and I see her dolls just kind of hanging out on top of there. And one of them, which is a Raggedy Ann doll, hanging out towards the edge. And in the split second that I'm looking in the room, the Raggedy Ann doll, which is sitting on the edge, falls. And that catches my attention. It stops me dead in my tracks. And it falls towards the ground. It's almost like it's in slow motion. I'm watching this happen, and I don't know why this caught my attention. But as it falls, it stands. It falls on its feet and stands upright. Now, if you know anything about Raggedy Ann dolls, they don't really have any structure. There's nothing hard there, nothing that would support them. There should be no reason that this doll stood. But as it fell from a dresser that was about 3 to 4 foot tall, it stood. And it stood for a solid 5-7 seconds. And then kind of collapsed on its own weight. To this day, it just blows my mind. It's incredible because it was either something paranormal or the chances of this doll landing so perfectly for itself to be supportive of itself without any hard structure, the chances are astronomical. Thanks for your time, and I hope to hear it on the show.
Made it onto the show indeed, Mike. Thank you for sharing the story. Now, even though I'm not a big believer in the original Annabelle story, I still feel like we need to briefly discuss it, as she too is a Raggedy Ann doll. The long and short of the story is that the doll was gifted to a nursing student, and not long after that, the doll began moving on its own, leaving notes and even attacking a house guest. That's when paranormal researchers Ed and Lorraine Warren stepped in and took the doll to their private museum, where it remains today, under lock and key. Now, if you want to learn more, it's all over the internet. They even made a few movies about the subject. There's no shortage of information out there. But this isn't Annabelle. This was a doll in Mike's sister's room, in the same house that he was living in. A doll that seemed to have the ability to not only move on its own, but to support its own weight as well. Now, before we move on, given that this was a creepy doll story out of the state of Texas, I figured it was a good time to share this infamous news story that made the rounds 4-5 years ago. A story about a South Texas beach that's literally littered with creepy dolls.
Washing up with the high tide is something that is turning heads and sparking reactions like this.
I think it's very freaky.
Dozens of dolls and doll parts found stuck in the sand along the South Texas coastline.
We've found well over 20 dolls over the last few years.
Jace Tunnell is the director at Mission Aransas Reserve.
We monitor about 40 miles of beach from North Padre Island all the way up to Matagorda.
He is among the researchers who normally sets out in search of things like turtles and birds on the beach. But every once in a while, he finds one, a creepy doll, or a bucket of them.
Sometimes it's got barnacles coming out of the eyes, or the hair's just halfway falling off. You know, stuff kind of what nightmares are made out of.
He says the dolls could be coming from anywhere in the world.
I can't imagine having this up in my house.
But there are some collectors who treasure these finds. In fact, they're being sold to raise money for the Amos Rehabilitation Keep, with every penny going to help in the recovery of stranded sea turtles and birds.
That clip from KIII, ABC News 3, out of Corpus Christi. And I suggest you go to our website, monstersamonguspodcast.com, and click the show notes tab. It's there that you can lay eyes on this video and see the dolls for yourself. Trust me when I say, the visuals will never leave you. Now, from haunted dolls to leather-clad ghosts, please welcome Jeff out of the Buckeye State.
Hi, this is Jeff, calling from Southwest Ohio. This story takes place when I was in college at a Southwest university known for many ghost stories. This happened in October of 1987. We had a friend that was in his dorm room asleep, woke up in the middle of the night and saw a gentleman laying on the floor in a brown leather jacket. He thought it was his roommate had come back early from his night job and just went back to sleep. That morning, the roommate walked in and the other roommate told the story of the guy in the brown leather jacket. My roommate, who was into kind of black magic and different things, decided he wanted to do a Ouija board in the room on Halloween night. So we did a Ouija board and asked who the person was, if it had a name, and all it spelled out was hell. I got up, I had to go back to our room, and as I walked down the hallway to our room, each room I passed, the phone rang. Go to a couple nights later, and we are sleeping in our dorm room, my roommate next to me. I woke up in the night, and there was a guy standing over my roommate in a brown leather jacket. I rolled back over, just thought I was dreaming, and then I talked to my roommate that morning, didn't mention it, and he said, I had the craziest dream. He said, I was standing over myself in a brown leather jacket looking at myself. Just a quick story, but love the show, Derek. Keep it spooky.
We appreciate that entry, Jeff. Well, gang, what do you suppose Jeff experienced here? A classic ghost? A time slip, perhaps? Or maybe the ghost of the living? After all, the roommate did claim that it was him in the leather jacket. Something strange took place for sure that night, but I'll let you choose which label to put on it. Thanks again, Jeff, for taking the time to call in. Now, folks, let's move on from ghosts and spirits and move into the realm of alien encounters. Please welcome Ty, out of California, back to the program.
Hey, Derek. This is Ty again. I live in L.A., and of course, I grew up in Redlands. This took place probably, I want to say, late 2021, around October of 2021. So I was going to go visit my mother in Redlands. And my roommate had an old, like a 99 Ford Escort that he didn't use that I had access to. So I drove that down, got to mom's place probably just after 9. And as I was walking up to her apartment, I noticed she was inside, but she was looking out of her front door window. Her front door had a window on it that was probably about maybe 2 feet by 2 feet that she could look out of. And she was looking at a UFO that she said would rather frequently hover above her apartment complex around the same time every night, usually like around 9:10, 9:15. It would stay for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then it would kind of slowly move off into like a western direction. It looked to be about maybe 75 to 80 feet high up in the air. What was odd about it was that it looked like a very exaggerated teardrop, and all you could see was just this white outline of the shape of it. And what was also odd is that it would kind of go from bright white to kind of dim white, kind of back and forth. Not pulsating, but just kind of for a while, it would be a bright white, and we kind of go to like this dull white. So again, we kind of just both watched it for about another 10 minutes. Then, of course, it went off over the building. So didn't give it much thought. But again, I was kind of amazed that my mom had even paid that much attention to the sky, since she's usually not normally a sky watcher. So the next day, I was home, so I kind of went to the window around the same time, didn't see it. But I know she said it didn't come every night, said it came about 2 or 3 times, roughly a week. So didn't give it much thought. The next night, I was actually out running errands, and I happened to come home around that time. It was about 9:10, and I parked on the side of the street. And let me kind of give you some backstory here about a couple of things. First of all, mom lives like in a very small cul-de-sac. There are apartments at the end of the cul-de-sac, and then a couple of houses on both sides of the street. But there are no street lights, so this street is extremely dark. If someone were like at street level on foot looking into my car as I'm parked, they could probably see my outline, but they really couldn't even tell what I'm doing. It's that dark, and that's kind of important for a little later on the story. Also, in my roommate's car, so in his glove box, he would usually keep, there was a pair of sunglasses that were fairly expensive that he kept in there. There was some, you know, loose cash, maybe about $12 or $13 in cash. I remember there were a couple of lottery tickets that he hadn't cashed in. I think there were maybe like $23, $24 and some papers, things like that. And he had some old army binoculars, looked to be like either World War II or Korean type of army issue binoculars. Old, very rusted, not valuable, just something he kept in there. So that's also important to the story. So as I come home this one night, it's about 9:10, and the UFO now is like directly in front of me, probably about, oh, I'd say maybe 100 feet ahead of me and probably still about 75 to 80 feet, you know, hovering above the complex. So my thought is to now, at least while I'm in the car and it can't be seen, to grab the binoculars out of the glove box and try to get a closer look at this thing. So I take them out. I try to steady my hand. For some reason, I just can't keep a steady hand after a minute or two. I try to even crouch down and steady it on the dashboard, but for some reason, my hand's just not staying steady. So after a couple minutes, I just give up, put it in the glove box, close it, lock it, make sure the windows are rolled up, lock the car, and go inside. So the next day, I came out about mid-afternoon. I had to run some errands. And so as I'm walking up to the car to unlock it, to my horror, I see that the glove box is open. And I knew for a fact that I closed it. I'm very methodical about that, especially if it's someone else's vehicle. So, of course, now I'm in a sure panic because my first thought is someone tried to break in, tried to maybe hotwire the car, stole the contents, damaged the car, whatever. So, you know, in a panic, I'm kind of frantically trying to open the door. I unlock the door. And my first thought is I look at the ignition because I'm thinking someone may have tried to hotwire it. They may have, you know, damaged the ignition, but of course that's fine. I look at the steering column, that's fine. I look around the car, there's nothing damaged. As I said, the door was locked, so no sign of forced entry. So finally thinking, okay, well, the glove box is open. God knows what's been taken out of there. So I go around to the other side of the car, sit down in the seat to look at the glove box. And amazingly, everything's there. The sunglasses are still there. The $12 or $13 are still there. The lottery tickets are still there. Papers are there. The only thing missing was a pair of old binoculars that I had used the night before. And I thought, well, that's kind of strange. First of all, why would someone break into a car just to steal some old binoculars that aren't worth anything? Second of all, though, it's so dark in here, though, there's no way anyone could have even seen or known what I had in here, which makes no sense. And then I thought, you know, kind of going back to a lot of UFO sightings, I thought that a common theme seems to be that people will say that when they spot a UFO, they'll say that it seems to be this kind of awareness that the occupants know that they're watching them. And that was my first thought. My first thought was when I tried to watch this craft with the binoculars, the occupants or whoever was aboard this craft somehow had an awareness that it was me. I've often wondered if it's like some kind of maybe telepathic thing, maybe some kind of intuitive thing. Who knows? But I really get the feeling that this was kind of a cautionary tale that I was watching them. They knew I was watching them and they took away the binoculars to say, don't do that. Don't watch us. We know you're watching us. So with that, I closed the glove box, you know, got in the car, went about my day. And then I stayed a couple more days and then I left. And while I was there, the UFO appeared a couple more times and I just safely watched it from the window with Mom. I didn't go back and try to, you know, look at it any other way or through any other lens or whatever, just to that. So anyway, as I said, kind of an odd thing, but I kind of just got the feeling that I really had a bizarre feeling that if I had even done that one more time, I really get this bizarre feeling that I probably would have ended up missing, abducted, something like that. So again, I kind of just heeded that warning, left it alone. Anyway, whatever that's worth, hope you can use that. Great show as always. Take care.
Ooh, that's unsettling for sure, Ty. Seems like someone or something was watching. Now Ty contemplated what might have happened had he used the binoculars again. Well, thanks to what many consider to be the very first alien abduction case, we might not have to wonder what would have happened if he did. In the late evening of September 19th, 1961, Betty and Bernie Hill were driving through New Hampshire when they spotted a strange bright light off in the distance. Bernie pulled over to get a better look at what he thought were beings moving inside the craft. That's when he retrieved a set of 7x50 crescent binoculars. The next thing that either of them could remember was driving back on the highway. Much time had passed by, and many miles traveled without a single recollection. Now, those binoculars seem to play a big part in the Hill abduction case. It's through the lenses that the entities seem to communicate with their would-be victims, even from a distance. Here's a clip of Barney himself talking about the moment the creatures began to communicate with him. Now, a warning. The following testimony was recorded while Barney Hill was under hypnosis. So, parts of this recording are a bit disturbing.
This creature, this leader, is telling me something.
He's telling you something. How? How is he getting it to you?
I can see it in his face.
What did he tell you?
Stay there and keep looking. Just keep looking and stay there. And just keep looking. Just keep looking.
Could you hear each other?
Oh, I gotta pull these binoculars away from my eyes. Because if I don't, I'll just keep staying there.
Could you hear him tell you this?
Oh, no. He didn't say it.
You felt he said it.
I know.
You know he
just
said it.
Just there. Yeah. Just stay there, he's saying to me.
It's all right.
Pounding in my head. Pull the binoculars away. God, give me strength.
All right.
Pull them down. Run. Pull these binoculars down and run. God. If there's my God, give me strength. I gotta get away.
So the moment that Ty mentioned binoculars being involved in this sighting, the Hill abduction case was the first thing that I thought of. And it sounds like Ty put his binoculars down just in the nick of time. Now, why aliens would steal them later on? Well, that's anyone's guess. Weird in any way you slice it, Ty. Thank you again for sharing the entry. All right, it's time to slip off for another quick ad break, but I'll be right back with all sorts of strangeness. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Dude, I'm letting you know that I was about to do my first open mic.
Now, this next entry takes place under the bed. Please welcome Neil out of Pennsylvania.
Hey, Derek. This is Neil. I'm currently living in Pittsburgh. And this is what happened in about 1986, 1987. I was getting ready for school, putting my clothes on. I'm sitting on the bed, and I hear this very deep, heavy, like, breathing underneath my bed. It was just a single bed. It was a kid's bed, you know. But I'm hearing this. It sounded to me like a great big dog breathing under my bed, which is funny because we've never owned a dog. And I don't think the dog has ever even lived in that house, as far as I know. But it scared me so bad that I literally jumped off of my bed almost into the next room, and I hit the ground and spun around because I wanted to see what was underneath the bed. And there's nothing there. So I just continued my day, got ready and went to school. So I don't know what else to say. It's never happened anything like that since then. The only explanation I can think of is there was an air duct. So unless someone was in the bathroom, which is on the other side of the wall, like breathing through that. But the only people in the house was me and my brother and maybe my granddad. He wasn't the kind of person to do that kind of stuff either. Plus, pretty sure he was downstairs, and I'm pretty sure I would have checked on that. Again, this is 30-something, 40 years ago. Yeah, just thought it was weird. Wanted to share it. Love your show, man. Bye.
Thank you, Neil. You know, this isn't the first instance of breathing furniture shared on the show. And trust me when I say, it also won't be the last. But chances are you'll think about this story the next time you're napping on the couch or sleeping in your bed. And when you do, don't forget to thank Neil for sharing the tale with you. And also, don't forget to check out our merchandise shop. We have tons of officially licensed Monsters Among Us gear available to you. just visit monstersamonguspodcast.com and click the shop tab. Now, unintentionally, tonight's show is shaping up to be very Texas heavy, because we're headed back down to the Lone Star State, this time to hear a tale from Victoria. So please, welcome her to the program.
My name is Victoria, and I live in San Antonio, Texas. This story goes back to my 21st birthday. I lived in an apartment on the third floor at the time, near a college area, and, you know, I ended up going to bed. My room was in the front of the apartment. There was a little doorway balcony. So it would be one door, and then it would go to the next door into the apartment. But in between those doors was a window, and my window, that was the window to my room. My friends had already gone to bed, and I had gone to bed too. And I woke up around, I want to say 2 or 3 in the morning. I just have this weird, unsettling feeling. And when I woke up, I kind of was laying there on my back, almost like in a sleep paralysis state. I wasn't moving, but I could see the whole room around me. In the corner of the left of my room, I had some aluminum balloons. It was my birthday, so I could see the balloons. I was looking around the room, and I looked back at the balloons, and I could see a tall, dark, gray figure standing in between those balloons. There was probably 2 or 3 balloons there, and it wasn't the same color. Balloons were kind of metallic, so the dark figure was a grayish color, and it had black eyes, and I remember looking at it, and it's almost as if it saw me see it. I think it was trying to hide, but it could see me see it. And so at that point, once it saw me, literally it took off through that window that was in between those doors that lead outside, went straight through the window, and I was just laying there. I couldn't move. Again, I was in a sleep paralysis state. And so at that point, I was able to move once I had left the room. But I just wanted to mention, I'm someone who has sleep paralysis a few times a year, but I'm a strong believer in aliens. I've done a ton of research, and I feel like I've seen a couple of VIPs in my lifetime. You know, I'm pretty sure what I saw was an extraterrestrial. It was just really weird. But yeah, hope you enjoyed my story. Thank you.
Thanks, Victoria. More balloon strangeness. A while back, I'd commented on the unusual number of balloon-related stories I've received here on the show over the years. And I guess, technically, we can add this one to the list. Creepy stuff, whatever it was. And many thanks, Victoria, for taking the time to share. Now, gang, that brings us to tonight's final entry, at least for the main portion of the program. So please join me in welcoming Elliot to the show.
Hey, Derek. This is Elliot from previously Utah. Not currently there, but this story takes place in Utah. I listened to the Utah stories and was upset that I hadn't submitted. I've been meaning to. Partly because I don't know how to explain what happened, but I've heard multiple other people mention similar things. So this takes place in Neff's Canyon, Utah. It's just up on Mount Olympus. Just you can see it from Salt Lake Valley. You know, I'd get off work and just go hike for like a couple hours. So one day I'm like, I'm just going to hoof it because I've taken every trail up here. I got off work. I was alone. So I'm walking like, you know, super steep grade, like, you know, there's a reason people aren't hiking this, because it's just like almost straight up. It's tiring. You're bushwhacking. And so I'm going through the brush. I get up. I'm probably, I don't know, I'd guess about a mile in. And I see a flat spot with like just a big tree on it. I'm like, oh, sweet. I can go rest for a minute. And the second I get onto this flat spot, some huge creature, you know, moose, mountain lion, whatever, I've seen them all up there, runs through the bush next to me. And, you know, I don't want to get stomped by a moose. I don't want to get attacked by a mountain lion. So I hide behind that one huge pine tree that's just on this little flat, probably like 5x5 outcropping. I have my back to the tree, and this is where I don't know how to explain it. First, I think that, like, potentially I'm having, like, some cardiac problem. I'm feeling, like, my insides shaking, like a bass note. But then I can hear, the only way I can describe it is the sound the predator makes in the Predator movie, mixed with, like, a big cat purr or growl, or even, like, you know, vocal breakup, like, you know, the way you record your voice on your podcast and that breakup, but it was steady. So, like, the click, predator click, like, but low. And it was, like, shaking my body cavity and my skull. And I, like, grabbed my chest thinking I was having a heart attack because it was a very strenuous hike. And I was just, like, coming from work and probably hungover, usually am. So I'm sitting there under this tree, hiding with my back to it. There's just this steady, pulsing sub-frequency, like vibrating all my internal organs to the point where it was like slightly off from my heartbeat. And it felt like I wasn't sure, like my heart was like either trying to like match it, you know, like when you're walking step in step with somebody, or I don't know, it was literally messing with my functions. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. I don't usually get terrified, but I ran down the mountain, and since I wasn't on a trail and I was on just going straight up, essentially I fell a ton. By the time I got to my car, I was covered in blood and mud, and people were like in the parking lot were looking at me like I was insane. It was the weirdest experience of my life. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks, Elliot. Now, a little background to help set the scene here. Named after the owner of the area's first flour mill, Franklin Neff. Neff's Canyon is part of the Wasatch Mountains, a range that runs 160 miles, all the way up to the Utah-Idaho border. Plenty of space for large animals to hide. Moose, bear, cougar, and maybe even something else. Because the Wasatch Mountains have long been rumored to harbor giants, 8, 9, 10-foot-tall hairy beasts that most folks these days would refer to as Bigfoot. In fact, the activity is so prevalent in those mountains that folks have taken to call them Sasquatch. At least that's what Google tells me. And based on what Elliot is telling us, that he encountered a large creature up there in those mountains, it's possible that that's what he saw. Now, this isn't just a jump to a conclusion. I'm basing this theory off of a number of different details. First, the location. Although that particular section of the range has fewer Bigfoot reports than others, it's still a hotspot. And, as I just said, Elliot claimed to have seen some sort of large animal. But the details that helped convince me that Bigfoot could be a possibility is the sound that Elliot heard. A low, rumbly bass sound. And anyone with knowledge in the Bigfoot field should instantly recognize what that might be. Infrasound. Now, for a little background on infrasound, we turn to the television program Expedition Bigfoot.
Infrasound is a powerful, inaudible, low-frequency tone used by large mammals like tigers to ward off animals that have entered their territory. Many eyewitnesses have reported experiencing debilitating illness or paralysis while in the presence of Bigfoot.
If there is infrasound in this signal, that will narrow down our window of the potential animals who use infrasound. Let me tell you something, there's not a lot of them in the Pacific Northwest. No other animal produces infrasound in this region.
Now that clip features friend of the show Bryce Johnson and does a great job of explaining this known phenomenon. So with all of that information in mind, is it possible that Elliot had a close encounter with a large, hairy, bipedal creature on the slopes of the Wasatch Mountains? Or was it simply something explainable? Whatever it was, it sure seemed like it had an effect on Elliot, both during and now post-sighting. Maybe it was just a moose. Maybe it was a bear. But given the location and the activity described, I'd say it's at least a possibility that it was something yet to be discovered by science. Fun stuff, Elliot. And we thank you again for taking the time to share. And folks, that's the end of the main portion of the program. But don't push stop just yet, because I have more in store for you right after this. Monsters Among Us podcast is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Copyright Red Crow Media. Additional support is provided by Sarah Carter Hayes, Delaney Bowers, and Connor Ryan. All media used in this production is done so under the protection of fair use. Now give the show a like and follow on social media. Join us on YouTube. Leave us a rate and review wherever you can do such a thing. And be sure to join our Discord server. Now don't forget, you can catch the show every Saturday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern on the UnX Digital Network. Just visit unxnetwork.com to tune in. Now tonight's score was provided by Iron Cthulhu Apocalypse, Go.ag Music, and Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Now folks, watch the movie, BoregoTriangle.com. We'll get you the info. Join us in the beyond. Keep listening or visit MonstersAmongUsPodcast.com and click the Patreon tab. Now I have to take a quick break, but believe it or not, the show ain't over. So don't touch that dial. I have more coming up right after this.
Inaccessible and to the health of its people.
Different ways we could go with this one, but today we're going to give it to.
Now, as promised, I have a secret story for you. We do one of these on every Thursday release, and I try to save this slot for some of the strangest, oddest, and most weird entries that we get. And I like to think the following is just that. From the state of Massachusetts, please welcome Anonymous to tonight's program.
Hi, Derek. I'm going to remain anonymous for this call, and I am calling about a haunted building that I lived in the city of North Adams in the mid-2000s. So the apartment was on Church Street in North Adams. And if you look up North Adams, Mass., there's a whole lot of lore with the city. The Hoosick Tunnel was built there, and the Masonic Temple in North Adams even had an episode of one of those ghost hunter shows that were popular at the time. And funny story, a friend of mine who lived in an apartment just up the street actually had the guys from that show help her move into her apartment, just randomly helped her pick up boxes. Anyway, the event that took place for me, Church Street is right adjacent to the college that we all went to, so a lot of us rented there, and I lived in an apartment that was confirmed to be haunted by the person who had lived there before me. And the whole time I lived there, it was just super uncomfortable. There was one hallway in particular that I hated, and my dog would not walk down. And I stuck it out for a couple months before I finally had enough. And not knowing very much about the paranormal at the time, my friend and I just Googled sort of how to get rid of a ghost. And so I did the whole light a white candle, ask the spirit to go into the light, so forth. And then that night I blew out the candle, you know, did my nighttime routine, plugged in my cell phone, what have you. Well, when I woke up the next morning, my cell phone had melted from the inside out. And it was one of those, you know, early 2000s, like Verizon flip phones. And so I took it to the Verizon store the next day, and they had said that they had never seen anything like that ever happen. And so I think that the ghost was letting me know that my little sad ritual wasn't doing too much and to leave them alone. So from that time on, I just decided to treat it like a roommate that we didn't really get along with. And that's my story. Anyway, I love your podcast so much. You're doing a great job. Keep it up, Derek. We appreciate you so much. Bye.
Thank you, caller, for sharing the experience and for the kind words. Now, here's the deal. Phones melt. They do. The lithium batteries they use sometimes erupt into a gassy fireball. People have been hurt. Homes have burned down. It's a serious thing, but it's uncommon. Typically, it occurs when the battery overheats or is damaged. It rarely just happens randomly, and almost never the very night that our caller decides to rid her apartment of an ornery spirit. So was that a coincidence, or was that retaliation? Or maybe just a faulty charging cable? Whatever it was wild stuff. And thankfully, the event didn't start a fire. So thanks again for ringing in, Mystery Caller. We appreciate the phone call. Alright folks, strap in and put on your helmets, because it's time to go beyond the after show we put on each and every Thursday. And you can join us for free using the free 7-day trial at either patreon.com or Apple subscriptions. Just visit monstersamonguspodcast.com and click the Patreon tab for more information. And of course, if you like what you hear, and I'm betting that you will, you can keep the episodes rolling for only $5 a month. That won't even get me a gallon of gas around here. It is quite the deal. And it's over in the beyond that we hear from folks like this anonymous caller.
Hey, love the show. Had a ghost story I wanted to share. So this ghost story involves my family. And it starts back with my mother when she was 9 or 10. So my family lives in Northern Virginia. We're about an hour and a half away from D.C. And my grandparents moved into this house when my mom was little, about 45 years ago. When my mom was about 9 or 10, she would see a tall, shadowed man in a fedora hat in the doorway. He wouldn't move much, except on the rare occasion where he would slowly creep into the room and kind of would stand over her. Sometimes she would think it was my grandfather until she would hear him either get up and go to the bathroom or hear him snoring in his room. And she said she would see him all the time. He never touched her. He never tried to harm anyone. But he would always stand and just lean over her bed. She said that sometimes she would blink and like that, he would be gone when her eyes opened. And sometimes he would slowly just disappear, either walking away.